Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Medication Madness, and now Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, it's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with guests unafraid to speak the truth about psychiatry and psychology and about how you can make the most of your own life.
And this is Dr. Peter Bregan. I'm glad to be with you again. Many of you know that I've been very concerned for many years now about the massive drugging and the psychiatric mistreatment of our soldiers. This has been going on for a long time, beginning with the Iraq wars. We are in this bizarre situation now in which for the first time, beginning with the Iraq wars, for the very, very first time, we are drugging active duty soldiers, which are about a million strong, a little more than a million men and women, many of them young. And we are even drugging our soldiers on deployment in combat zones. A memo disclosed about 2010 showed that 20% of active duty soldiers, that's out of the 1 million, were on some sort of psychoactive substances, psychiatric drugs, and pain meds. I have talked to people who have been in the active duty zones, who have said that 20, 30% and even more of soldiers in combat are on psychiatric drugs. The situation is quite bizarre in that soldiers are sent into combat with up to 180 days in their backpack. Now, looking at what they're taking, it turns out they're being given every class of psychiatric drug, the antipsychotics like Seroquel, benzodiazepines like Xanax and Valium, stimulant drugs. They're given for ADHD, mood stabilizers, virtually all the drugs. Now, just looking at the antidepressants, and this is largely true of all psychiatric drugs, there's a medication guide that comes along with these drugs that says that family members should monitor people every day who are taking these drugs. There's a long list of warnings on the antidepressants. And then there's this medication guide that actually brings up violence and says if you may get more violent on this drug, you or your family member should report it. We're giving this drug to people in combat. And people in combat, incidentally, who are fighting under extremely tense and difficult rules of warfare, where they're not allowed to even shoot back often without requesting permission to shoot back. Many of these soldiers are 24 years old or younger, and there are specific warnings in antidepressants for doubling the suicide rate in people 24 years and older, and I can tell younger, and I can tell you from the research that the rate's actually higher than that, than a double, and it actually pertains to all age groups. Think about how an 18, 19, 20-year-old, by the way, a third of Marines, who are often the ones in the combat zones, a third of the Marines are 21 years old or younger. Imagine that. I think the figure is like 20% of the Army. So you've got these young people, men and women, from my perspective, in my mid to late 70s here, they're like kids. What are they going to do with drugs when they carry them on their backpacks? Are they going to take them as prescribed? Are they going to take them irregularly and use them the way young people tend to use drugs? So here they have a drug they've been told is good for stress, take it. They've been told it's good for depression, take it. Well, they're feeling pretty good most of the time, and then they have a terrible event happen. A buddy gets killed, or they've been through a lot of stress, so they're going to take more of them. That just be commonplace. They're not going to necessarily take him as supervised, as recommended. There's no supervision. I mean, the second lieutenant isn't watching over all the soldiers to make sure they're doing their drugs properly. They may gamble with them for fun. They may trade them. They may do all the things that that same age group does in high school, late high school, and in college, and just on their own. Then what happens if a soldier gets a mental health diagnosis? Then he's put on multiple psychiatric drugs. I've talked to nurses who work in the areas where the soldiers get their rest and rehabilitation just before coming home. And these nurses have told me that they've been asked to review all the patients who have any kind of psychiatric diagnosis. That could be insomnia and anxiety or post-traumatic stress disorder. And these nurses found that every one of those soldiers was on at least three meds. None of them on two, none of them on one. All of them on at least three medications. Then what happens when they get back to the VA? By the way, I'm going to have a guest today in just a very few minutes who can really speak personally to these issues. So what happens when they get home to the VA? I can tell you from anecdotal stories told to me from people I've interviewed, and I can tell you directly from my work as a malpractice psychiatrist, medical expert, a medical expert psychiatrist in malpractice suits against the VA, that these young people, when they get home, young or older, get loaded up on multiple psychiatric drugs. You can even see 8 or 10 in a string or more. And there's no good track kept of them. So that's a disaster. So what begins with a soldier who's maybe having what? Surprising, some anxiety after his first deployment, put on psych drugs, maybe some sadness, loss after seeing people killed, including in these combat zones, you know, the civilians everywhere, seeing children killed, maybe by an accident killing a child. So you see what these soldiers are going through, and naturally, they're going to come back with anxiety. I mean, what is post-traumatic stress disorder? It's the reaction of a normal person with a normal brain to horrific stress. And I suspect that if you really look carefully, every single person who's been deployed into an active combat zone comes back with symptoms of PTSD. That is, they're hyper-alert or they're anxious, they're tense, they have nightmares, they relive the experiences, they stay away from anything that reminds them of the experiences, they jump when a car backfires. That doesn't happen much anymore, but when a gun goes off in the distance or firecrackers go off. So we have these young people coming back under conditions mentally that you expect any normal person to come back. They're loaded up on drugs, and many of them are dying abruptly, young people, cardiac arrest from an overload of these drugs when they get back. Others are developing horrible chronic problems from the drugs, obesity, elevated cholesterol, cardiac problems, diabetes, tardive dyskinesia, which is the neurological disorder that can be dreadful. It comes from the antipsychotic drugs. So there's an introduction about my concerns. And I want to say that it's much more dangerous and horrific giving psychiatric drugs to soldiers on active duty, because they, and especially if they're deployed into a combat zone, because they simply aren't going to be given the medication guides. They're not going to be given the warnings. They're not going to be seeing family every day for the family to help them. They're going to be under incredible stress. They're going to be young. They're going to be carrying all these meds around. Well, that leads me to Stan White. Stan, are you with me?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay, well, Stan White. Stan is a Gold Star father. He lost 2 sons in the War on Terror. He lost his son, Robert F. White, in Afghanistan in 2005. He lost another son, Andrew R. White, in the U.S. Marines, who died from medications given to him for PTSD in 2008. He and his wife, Shirley, have been on a mission ever since then to make changes. Now the Department of Defense and the VA docs are treating the young men and women, usually young, who have been diagnosed with PTSD. And I'm sure his concern is for all the soldiers, not just the ones diagnosed with PTSD. And he and his wife, Shirley, are advocating for peer counseling and professional counseling and other interventions that, in his words, quote, do not involve massive doses of antidepressants, antipsychotics, and analgesic drugs. I had the honor of meeting Stan and Shirley a few years ago. He'll be able to tell you the exact year, probably, in West Virginia, when I was down there speaking on behalf of veterans, many veterans down in that corner of West Virginia. And Stan was there, too, speaking on behalf of veterans and soldiers and trying to protect them from psychiatric drugs and to advocate for better approaches. Stan White, a profoundly grateful welcome to my show. Hello.
Yes. Thank you so much, Dr. Bregan, for having me here. And thank you so much for informing the public through your writing and through your speaking and through your practice that there are better ways to treat conditions such as PTSD besides massive doses of medication, which we believe killed our son Andrew and hundreds of others. And we welcome this opportunity to tell our story.
Well, please go ahead and do that. Tell the story of what happened to your son, Andrew White.
Okay. Andrew and his brother, Robert, and his older brother, William, were all serving in the military at the same time. William was on a ship. He's now retired from the Navy. Bobby, which Robert, was in Afghanistan, and Andrew was in Iraq. And so we, like any parent with three sons deployed, we were concerned about them. Andrew came home, we thought, in September of 2005, end of September. We were very grateful that he was there. We'd been home 5 days when we received word that his older brother, Bob, was killed in action. And our lives changed. With grief and trying to adjust to, that horrific situation. And it wasn't until 2.5 years that we experienced this again, when Andrew had been, this last 6 months of his life, was being treated for PTSD by the Veterans Administration. Started out giving him small doses of antidepressants and antipsychotics. And at the time of his death, he was being prescribed 60 milligrams of Paxil, 4 milligrams of Klonopin, and a whopping 1,600 milligrams of Seroquel, as well as he was taking some analgesic drugs for some injuries that he had after he got out of the military. And Andrew, probably about all the side effects that you had mentioned earlier in your introduction, Andrew had almost all of those, the weight gain, the tremors. He became a recluse. He had outbursts of anger. And we thought that's just what PTSD is doing. We didn't have any idea that it's the medication that was causing it until it was too late. And he was supposed to meet Shirley, his mother, for a lunch and get a cell phone. And he didn't show up for his appointment, so she became concerned, came home, and found him. He was dead. He had died in his sleep. And so we immediately started researching, why does a 23-year-old healthy young man go to sleep and don't wake up? Well, we had read a week or 2 weeks ahead of before that in the paper that a friend of his had died from medication. And then we started doing some more research, and we found within the end of January of 2008 to the 1st of May, I mean, of 2008, that four soldiers within 60-mile radius of Charleston, West Virginia, died in the street. And we found out they were taking the same medications, antidepressants, Seroquel, and analgesic drugs. So we started finding, first reaction we thought, well, we'll go to our local senators and congressmen and we'll tell them what's happening and they'll change this. Well, we were naive enough to think that that would happen. Senator Rockefeller was very gracious. He started an investigation of Andrew's death and one of the other soldiers' deaths. And through the VA, and the report came back that these two young men had met standard of care. And I still don't really know what standard of care was. My belief is standard of care is most frequent care. Maybe like your comment on that, Dr. Brigham.
Well,
what do you see as standard of care?
I'd like you to continue telling the story. I just think that it's so important. But no, it doesn't need any standard of care. Seroquel is an antipsychotic drug. It shouldn't be given to anybody under a standard of care for anything other than psychosis to begin with. So there's no standard of care. It may be the VA's standard of care, which I can tell you is abysmal, but it doesn't meet any rational standard of care. I think somebody got into the – I would make a prediction that if there were hearings on this, they'd find that somebody the manufacturer Seroquel got somewhere into the Army and the VA and convinced them to give Seroquel to soldiers, which they were doing until I think very recently they may have stopped with all the exposés, including mine, giving it to them for sleep as a sleep aid when it's an antipsychotic drug that has all those horrible effects I listed, including the sudden death syndrome. So. Now, it doesn't need any rational standard of care, but please go on, Stan White, with the story of you.
Yes. So that led us to do some research, and we started with a small group of us Googling names, military men dying in their sleep, and we met Dr. Fred Bauman from California, and he assisted us with this endeavor. And we started finding that there were, I think the last time I stopped researching, we had the names of over 300 soldiers who were just found dead in bed. And we have no way of knowing particularly what caused that death because of the HIPAA laws and so forth. You can't contact. So we tried contacting the families. I did contact several families. And almost every family I contacted asking me what medication for their sons or daughters were taking. And the one common drug that kept popping up was Seroquel. So we started on a campaign to find out why is this drug still being prescribed off-label as a sleep aid. So through our research, and then last May, I believe, April of 2012, I received a letter from the Joint Staff from the Department of Defense, stating that Seroquel had been removed from the approved formulary, which, as I understand it, was it could not be used without special permission as a first-line treatment for PTSD. So we thought, this is great, but this is the Department of Defense. So we immediately started making contacts with the Veterans Administration, starting with the local VA hospital where Andrew was treated, and we made contact with the chief physician for PTSD, Center for PTSD, for the VA, to national level. Had a phone interview and asked this physician why they were still giving Seroquel as a sleep aid when the Department of Defense had apparently removed it from formulary. And he gave me a runaround saying that, you know, they're a different organization. They don't necessarily go by the same rules that the DOD does. And so we then contacted the head of the pharmacology department and basically got the same information. So we're not getting anywhere with the VA. So then we decided that maybe the best approach would be just to go to the media outlets, tell our story to many places we could, and ask people to check, what is your son or daughter taking? What drugs are you taking? Why are they taking them? Do your research and make a decision for yourself. Do I need to see my primary care physician and gradually get myself off of these drugs, or my son or daughter off of drugs? Or what treatments are effective? And the more I have talked to other soldiers, and the more reading I do, especially from people like you, Dr. Gregan, they're finding that alternative treatments are the most effective. Things like cognitive behaviors, sports, risked sports like skiing, mountain bike riding, running, anything that will get your mind off of the horrible situations that you're in. You know, I remember you mentioned at the beginning of the show that PTSD is a natural reaction to a horrific event. Well, why do you have to treat that with drugs? Okay, if you have triggers that remind you of these events, let's avoid those triggers. Or if there's noises, let's avoid those noises. Let's do other types of therapy, art therapy, exercise, anything except the medication we believe is killing our soldiers. We've read several books written by psychologists and psychiatrists that are revealing to us that medication is not the best way to treat these. So if that's the case, why is the VA still drugging our soldiers? We've been to Congress, not testifying in Congress, but visit members of Congress, sending letters, and finally, Senator Rockefeller, this past August, sent a letter to the VA, the Honorable Eric Ciesecki, asking some of the same questions we've asked. You know, like, what is the VA doing to create evidence-based approaches for this illness? Questions like, is there any studies being made on the effects of psychiatric medications? It's not supported by clinical practice guidelines. And I have yet to get an answer back. You know, that's my next step, is try to pursue this again and see if the VA has answered those questions that Senator Rockefeller has asked for in our behalf.
You know, one thing that might help the audience understand is Seroquel was actually one of the few or only antipsychotics being given to the soldiers on active duty, the 180-day supplies, and it was being given off-label for sleep, and, of course, hugely given in massive doses to non-psychotic people in the VA. Well, the company that makes Seroquel is Johnson & Johnson. Johnson & Johnson is the largest drug company in the world. It is by market cap, that is, you know, the value of the company on the stock market, its market cap capitalization, it's number 10. That's 10. So, I mean, that's really high up, and it is the highest up drug company. So we're talking about the company of huge power. And by the way, I've actually been the medical expert in lawsuits against Johnson & Johnson. So you can imagine the kinds of enemies I have out there, all well-deserved in terms of taking on such power. And, you know, a company like Johnson & Johnson, I mean, it certainly isn't libeling them to say they have huge power, enormous power, and they somehow manage to find somebody or several somebodies in the armed services and to somehow make them happy and in the VA to literally authorize the off-label use by the Department of Defense for soldiers going into combat, and to get the VA to rely on it massively. We're talking with Stan White. Stan, let me just actually remind the audience again, folks who just tuned in. Stan's a Gold Star father. He lost two sons in the War on Terror. And the folk, one son was lost in combat, and another was lost after he developed PTSD and was over-medicated and died in sleep at home. And not long after, I guess, how long after he found out his brother had died in combat did he die in his sleep?
About 2.5 years. Yeah, Bob died September the 26th in 2005, and Andrew died February 12th, 2008.
Yeah.
So it was roughly 2.5 years afterwards, and I'm sure that it was a combination of the horrific events that he experienced in Iraq and the thought of losing an older brother who he absolutely worshipped. You know, all three of my sons served in different branches of service. Oldest was in the Navy, Bob was in the Army, and was an airborne soldier, airborne ranger. And Andrew was a Marine, and each wanted to seek their own path to serve our country, and they were all three great Americans and great soldiers, Marines, and sailors.
Stan, and, do you know any of your sons, any three of them, was given psychiatric drugs on active duty before Andrew was given medication?
Not that I know of. No, I know my older son has never taken anything like that. Whether Bob was or not, I don't know. Bob only had two combat tours. He had a combat tour in Kosovo, and then he had a very short combat tour in Afghanistan when he was killed. He was only there from August and September, and there less than 2 months when he was killed. So,
and do you know when your son, Corporal Andrew White, when he got his first medication, did he get it on the way out of?
He was a reservist. He was a reservist, so he was taking a while. He was still in the reserves. He was a Marine Reserve. And he would go to 2 week training in the summer, and then he would do 1 weekend a month duty. And when he was going through these weekend meetings, was when he started showing signs of PTSD. And
that was after a tour of duty?
That was after his tour of duty, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So he's back home, and that's when he gets his first medication.
Right,
he's
back home. Being treated by the VA, right. But he was still in the reserves.
Did he go back on active duty on the meds?
No. He was still, when he was on the meds, he would go to weekend training. Yes. He was, while he was on medication, he was doing training.
But he didn't go into...
not combat, no, sir. Not after he was on medication, no.
Well, we're on the break at 4:30. When we come back, I want to keep talking about these issues with Stan White, and I want to describe to the audience, just to our listeners, just how these drugs worsen PTSD. And maybe, Stan, if you feel like it, you could talk about how you and your wife have coped with all of this, because one of the themes of my show is how good folks find purposes. So let's go to break now. And this is Dr. Peter Breggin. I'm back with my guest, Stan White, the Gold Star father, who, along with his wife, Shirley, is devoting himself to the mission, as he calls it, and as it is, of trying to see that the deaths, the sudden unexpected deaths of young Army soldiers are stopped by stopping their massive exposure to psychiatric drugs, including a particular culprit, Seroquel, which is known for disrupting the heart rhythm and causing sudden unexpected death. We even know how it occurs. It's even mentioned, as I recall, in the label for Seroquel. During a break, I Googled Stan White, and of course there's a lot of Stan Whites in this world, but you find him very easily if you Google Stan White Vets Advocate. Vets or Veterans Advocate. Stan White Vets Advocate will bring him right up. Stan, you still with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
One of the things I'd like to talk about just briefly for folks, something that's not really widely recognized, antidepressants are among the more common drugs given for PTSD, and two of them have been approved for PTSD, and they got approved by giving them for a few weeks to soldiers who had had PTSD for many years. Many years. What has that got to do with this? Nothing, of course. I mean, all it showed was that if somebody was many, many years suffering from emotional difficulties, you could blunt them for a few weeks. They weren't tested on soldiers in the first year or two or three of their disturbances. There's so much the sleight of hand that goes on. Now, why wouldn't they test these drugs on soldiers who had acute PTSD? Because there are plenty of those young men and women around. Well, because, in fact, the antidepressants are going to worsen PTSD. If you think about the symptoms of the adverse effects of antidepressants, they include insomnia. That's in common with PTSD. Agitation and anxiety, that's in common with PTSD. Disinhibition, you know, loss of impulse control. By the way, all this is in the label for these drugs, in part because when the drug labels were being revised in 2004, the FDA panel was given a copy for their package that went to every single one of them, their small packages, was given a copy of my article on this in 2003 in the International Journal of Risk and Safety in Medicine, which described all these symptoms, and they actually pretty much took it right out of the article. So what else did they cause? Causes hypomania and mania. Certainly a bit of hypomania can be a part of PTSD. Causes suicidality, that can be a part of PTSD. Violence, because actually that string of symptoms mentioned in the official FDA approved label includes aggressivity and hostility. So PTSD definitely increases that. So you can see that the common profile of adverse effects, which are stimulant-like effects, cocaine-like effects, that you can get from the antidepressant drugs, the ones most commonly used, are indistinguishable from the effects of PTSD. So the drugs that are approved for PTSD will make it worse. Stan, did you have something that you wanted to pick up on from your thoughts listening to me, or would you like to talk some about how you've managed?
Well, I certainly have both found that we need to find a way to keep other families from experiencing the grief we've had. And I don't want you to say you turn it into something, you can't turn a death into something positive, but you can turn it into a mission to honor Andrew by trying to prevent another soldier or Marine or airman from dying. And that's been our mission. We have traveled quite a bit, speaking to small groups. We've done several radio shows. We've done some several TV interviews. I think the most recent we did was on Fox Network with Douglas Kennedy, a three-part series. And
We were both on that.
We were both on that
Douglas
series. And yes, it was a very good series, matter of fact.
Yes.
And I thought your insights were very good.
You can get it on my website on Bregan.com.
Yes. And we have worked with some other organizations that have a very diverse group of people. We work with a group, CCHR, and a group called ISCPP, Operation Speak Up, and we have gone to just to tell our story to anywhere, any place that someone will listen if it will save someone's life. And it's very stressful for us. And Shirley and I just spent the last 2 weeks traveling from North Carolina to Kentucky, to Washington, D.C. And it's stressful, but it's helpful to us to see that if we can save one person. And matter of fact, we have met some wonderful people on our journey. We used to get phone calls every week from someone would say, well, yes, I lost my son, just like that. Now we're getting phone calls from people who says, my son or daughter has PTSD. What can I do to help? Where can I get help? I don't want them to take meds. Who can I talk to? And so we have started referring him to places to read, people we interview. You're at the top of that list, Dr. Bregan, in your writings. Your books that you mentioned at the beginning, I know, like I told you this last night, I started reading your book, Medication Madness, and I couldn't read it all the way through because I got so upset of the horrific events that have happened. We met some wonderful families that have been destroyed by that. One of the families you know of, Tony Orban's family, Margaret Orban, I believe has been on your show. The tragedy that she and her daughter-in-law have experienced with her son's suicide and committing a horrific crime while he was taking these drugs. And the multiple suicides. Suicides is what, I think it's 22 a day in the military. Why are normal young men, you mentioned that the military, 33% of the Marines and 22% are under what, in their early 20s, why were they committing suicide? Because they're not finding an answer to how to treat PTSD. And I believe that most of this is the side effects of the medication. So that's what we're trying to do. And we've made, like I said, frequent trips to members of Congress, trying to persuade them, let's pass legislation to outlaw or at least curtail the use of these antipsychotic and antidepressant drugs that are, not, that are being prescribed off-label. I'm not a physician. I can't tell someone to quit taking drugs or do take drugs. I'm telling you, do your research. Find other methods. I met a young lady at Arlington Cemetery this on Veterans Day. She just retired, and she was there visiting her husband's grave, and she said, I have PTSD. And she says, what I found at acupuncture has helped me. I'm not saying that's the answer to everyone, but let's find something else that helps. Talk therapy, professional therapy. I work with a couple of groups, one called Warfighter Sports and one called my mind escapes right now, but we take these soldiers skiing, mountain bike riding, playing golf. There's groups called Mission PTSD that try to find ways to give alternative treatments for PTSD. And to me, I haven't yet to find a list of soldiers who died from talk therapy, professional therapy, or doing these alternative treatments. But I can give you a name of 300 or 400 that died in their sleep when they were taking medication or committed suicide. That's what we're about. Educate the public. Try to find a way to treat PTSD besides over-medication.
Are you seeing a more receptive public as I am in the last few years?
Oh, absolutely. People come up to us all the time and say, well, you know, I want to see your list of resources, places we can go to find help, organizations that we can that will support that. And I think that you are doing a wonderful job, as long as other people like the ISCPP, the CCHR, these people are dedicated.
And you mentioned Fred Bauman. Let me tell folks who he is. Fred has been on this show, and he's a retired child neurologist who was among the first neurologists and only neurologists now who took a very active stand in rejecting the idea that ADHD is a disease and an active stand against drugging children with medications. And then he became interested in sudden unexplained deaths. Fred Bauman, he's a really good man.
Absolutely. I tell people that he's my mentor, the person that I turn to if I have a question about medications. Dr. Ann Blake Tracy is another person who has a wealth of information about these drugs.
Tell us a little more about how you and Shirley, I mean, when you first, had the blow of your son being killed in combat, your son Bobby, Robert F. White, and then the death of Corporal Andrew White, it had to have been cataclysmic. How did you go about recovering? Not that I'm suggesting you recover, that's the wrong word. How did you go about taking charge of your life again? Because it must have felt like life was totally out of your control, and you must have felt helpless for a while. Am I right about that?
And then absolutely. We were wondering. I think what motivated us first is to find out, why he died. The coroner's report said that it was an accidental intoxication of Paxil, Seroquel, and analgesic drugs that he was taking. And so we said, what's that mean? He was taking them as prescribed. And so what motivated us to find out, it wasn't the drugs that killed him. It had to be something else. I mean, physicians prescribe medication as to help people. The Hippocratic Oath is do no harm. And but now I start questioning, do your own research. Is this medication what's best for me? And what I found, had I known now what I had I known in 2008, February of 2012, what I know now, Andrew would be alive. I would have found a physician that would gradually take him off that medication and find other ways to treat PTSD. I would have found the Dr. Bregans, the Dr. Baumans, and talk to these people and say, there has to be a better way, and there is a better way. Find organizations like Mission PTSD and Warfighter Sports and these organizations that are out there providing alternative treatments. But I can't turn back the page. So what we've chosen to do is try to inform other people there is a better way to treat. And I'm so grateful for Dr. Bregan and his wife Ginger, and their mission. Going to speak. Like I said, I met you and I believe in the summer of 2009, where you were in Charleston for a PTSD conference with some friends of ours, the Vandenbergs, who, by the way, Tom was taking massive doses of medication, and he started reading about their stories and backed off of the medication. Nahas family, Michael Nahas, who was on massive medications, and now he has gotten off the medication and is working and doing quite well. Still has his issues, because what I found, there's no cure for PTSD. Am I correct, Dr. Brigham? You find ways to cope and ways to treat it, but there's no cure for PTSD, as I understand it.
Well, I don't think in terms of cures, because I don't think it's a disease. But certainly recovery from these kinds of huge trauma that soldiers go through, probably a lot like your situation with losing both your sons, you don't so much get over it as you find a new meaning in life and new approaches to life, and more you leave the worst of the anguish behind. And I certainly do think that many, many people, even with severe traumatic experiences, feel that eventually they have recovered. It's really about life and our responses to life. I have people in my practice stand who have brain damage from psychiatric drugs. It's quite severe, or shock treatment. And do they recover completely? Well, they still have residual problems from the injury to their brains, but they often have better lives than ever. So my goal with anyone, including my patients with PTSD, is that they go on to have actually a better life than they did before the influence of the PTSD. And I think that there's nowhere that it's more comparable than to people like you and Shirley who have lost their children, because, you know, do we recover from loss of a child? Well, yes and no. I mean, you find a new way, becomes less overwhelming, but you may go on to have a better life eventually. Does that make sense, Dan?
Absolutely it does. I mean, that's the way we cope. I mean, we have other family members that we have met that don't approach it the same way, and I don't make any judgments on them. Everyone deals with this in their own way. We have chosen to become advocates and make a change. That's the way we honor our son. When I end the interview with or a speech, I always tell the same thing. This story is not about Shirley and Stan White. It's about honoring our son Andrew and the hundreds of other soldiers and Marines and airmen and members of the Coast Guard, sailors who have died in service to our country. This story is about them, and try to make a positive change. To our goal is to keep another family going through what we have experienced. That's the way we honor Andrew Ryan White. That's what we
get. Two questions, Dan. Were you in the military, or Shirley, was she in the military?
And no, sir, we were not. No,
you were not. Why did three of your sons go in the military?
Our oldest son, William, I took him on a fishing trip when he was 8 years old at Myrtle Beach. And we were on a boat, and he fell in love with the water. So he says, I want to be on a ship. And then, so Bob's, our sons were competitive with each other. So Bob said, well, I want to go in the military, but I don't want to be like Andrew. In fact, we went out, William, we went out on a Tiger cruise, which family members get to go out on a one-day cruise from time to time if you have children in the Navy. So he said, I don't like the water, so I'm going to go on land. I'm going to go in the Army. And he wanted to jump out of airplanes, so he learned to be a paratrooper. And then Andrew came along, and he said, well, I said, you know, Andrew, the Marines are tough, and I want to be tough, and I want to outdo my brothers, and I want to be a Marine. So it was,
I'm sure he thought he was outdoing his brothers when he joined the Marines.
I'm sure. Each of them thought they were outdoing the other. And to me, they were all, you know, serving the country well, and I can't distinguish which one is the most honorable. They all are very honorable. Anyone who serves the military, you're risking your life, and you're to be honored and remembered for your service to our country. And not just on Veterans Day, but every day of the year.
What about your spiritual values? This is a program in the mental health field is fairly unique. I mean, there are others, I'm sure, somewhere, that welcomes discussions of God and spiritual values. Has that played a role in your life?
Absolutely. I found that the soldiers and Marines that I've interviewed that seem to be coping the best are the ones that have a deep religious experience. And I think that's a part of it, a big part of it, because they're finding a way to treat themselves from this, overcome this horrific event, and it's through their faith. I think that definitely plays a big part in it, because if you look at Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous, both of those are based on the 12-step program. In fact, one of the things we've explored is thinking maybe we ought to have a PTSD Anonymous or something defined for like a 12-step program. Maybe that would work.
I think that's great. None exist, Stan. I'm surprised they don't exist already.
It should be. I mean, maybe if we've explored, maybe we should start that. Because it has certainly been successful for narcotics and alcohol issues, so maybe we should have a PTSD. And it's not my original idea. I took that idea from another psychologist, Dr. Joe Tuantolo. I think it was the first one I remember had mentioned that. And so I think that may be something we should explore.
Yes, I thought for years that most of what we call mental disorders would do far better with an AA model than with ordinary psychiatry, because the AA model is an ethical spiritual model that emphasizes taking responsibility, making amends for whatever you've done, improving your life and the principles you live by. It includes, you know, a community and having support from the community, and it includes what a variation on counseling, you know, which is having a mentor who counsels you on a regular basis, but he's not called a mentor. I'm forgetting now what it's called in AA. I should remember, but when you have the special person that who's been sober longer than you and becomes your guide.
So
I think the AA model, you know, is a good model for almost any approach. And I also like the idea of giving up some of our issues to God. That's not being irresponsible. That's saying, I can't handle this. I need to not do it anymore. Give it up to you. Give it away. That's something I found myself doing with my anger many years ago, when I was actually dating a woman who was in AA, and when I would find myself getting very angry and frustrated in my reform work and some of my personal relations, and I just decided to give up my anger to God. I had a lot more work than that to do on it, but it was very, very helpful to me. We're in our last minute. Stan White, it's just a pleasure to have you on. I want you to say hello to Shirley for me, and Ginger sends her love to both of you. Do you have a 30-second parting thought that you'd like to share?
Yes, I would. If anyone wants to contact us, my email is hswhite2346@yahoo.com, and you can call me on my phone. It's 304-542-0945. Dr. Brigham, you're more than welcome to publish that if you want.
It's just been published. I could edit it out, but it's just been published. So
Okay. Folks
are welcome to call you. And remember, Stan, this will be up. This gets archived, as all the PRN shows get archived. This usually goes up in the evening, thanks to the good work of Casey and our archive department at PRN. And I think this is a very, very important hour. You'll be able to download it and use it in any way, Stan, that you think can be helpful. And if you get involved with trying to develop 12-step programs, I'd be happy if it were useful to lend my encouragement.
Thank
and,
you, sir.
And bless you in the work you're doing, sir.
Thank you, and give my regards to Ginger, and thanks again for allowing me to tell our story.
Thank you, Stan.
God bless.